Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Green Tech Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Green Tech Today is brought to you by the Eco-Imagination Challenge from GE. If you're an entrepreneur or business owner with a partnership idea for the smart grid or smart homes, enter the 200 million challenge to bring global scale to your innovation. For more details, go to ecoimagination.com and make sure you mention TWiT. Hey everybody, welcome to Green Tech Today. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Dr. Kiki.
And this is TWiT's very first show that focuses on the green side of technology.
It is, and green technology is pretty interesting.
It is interesting, and it's, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, we can talk a little bit about why we're both doing the show. I mean, for me, I always felt like, you know, over the last couple of years, green has become this really hot thing. You know, it's such a buzzword, going green and all that stuff, to the point where I've actually sort of stopped listening to a lot of it half the time because I feel like it's trendy or it's, you know, it's what people are supposed to be talking about because it's the cool new thing. And that's really not what green tech is about at all. In fact, most of the time it's being smart. You know, being green doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you're a hippie or some, you know, crazy environmentalist or you have to change your life.
Right.
It just means, hey, let's do something that can be cheaper, can save us time and money, and just be sort of a better for the environment overall.
Right. So going green definitely is, it's clean technology, it's smart technology. The conservation aspect is huge because that not only leads into being nice to the planet and giving you a warm, fuzzy feeling, but it also is good to your wallet, which is key.
I mean, let's all agree. We all love to save money, but whether you're a hippie or not.
Right. Right. But then the technology side of it is also, there's a lot of neat advancements being made scientifically. There's some just, the technology is cutting edge. It's new. It's exciting and interesting. And I just want to talk about it and let people know that not everything is greenwashed.
Right.
You know, and there are good products out there.
Right.
There's great stuff on the horizon that's going to be coming out really soon. And, you know, you can know what it is.
Exactly. And that's sort of the mission of the show is we want to learn. And as we learn, you'll learn. And we also want input from you. So it's a very, we're all in this together kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it.
We are looking forward to getting a lot of input.
Yes.
From you guys, the audience.
Yes.
We're looking forward to getting videos from you of things that you're building, DIY projects, ideas for gadgets and websites that you think are really awesome. Help us out and we'll help you out.
Exactly. Exactly. I definitely think, you know, you have so much of a science background.
Yeah.
And I feel like I am a green tech enthusiast, but not an expert. I wouldn't call myself so much an expert as someone who's looking to go down this path and sort of forcing myself to keep on top of this stuff because I do think it's important. I do think it's very easy to kind of stop paying attention, and it's a good exercise for everyone to get into. So hopefully you'll enjoy the show as much as we enjoy putting together the show for all of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's TWiT, so what's not to like? Anyway, we'll start off our very first segment. You know, it's easy to associate green tech with, you know, hybrid batteries and solar power and wind energy. But sometimes a good idea is just a good idea with the help of maybe a few developers, which is why I love this new site called NeighborGoods. And I had a chance to sit down with the CEO and founder, Mickey Krimmel, to find out a little bit more.
She is the founder and CEO of NeighborGoods, which is a way to save money and resources by sharing stuff with your friends in a startup sort of way. Mickey Krimmel, thanks for being on Green Tech Today.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about NeighborGoods. I mean, what prompted you to start it? Too many lawnmowers on your block or too many trips to FedEx or?
Yeah, it's definitely rooted in that. I had a personal experience a couple of years ago where I was getting ready to go to Thailand and I needed one of those travel backpacks. Mm-hmm. So I asked around to see if any of my friends had one and I couldn't find one to borrow. So I ended up buying one for about $200 knowing I was only going to use it, you know, once, maybe twice. Right. And I realized that was true for all the stuff I owned. You know, I would spend a lot of money for something that I really only needed limited access to. I didn't necessarily need to own it. So yeah, that's the idea. You know, how many lawnmowers, how many power drills does your block really need to have?
And in the about section of the Neighbor Goods website, you quote, you know, this like crazy statistic: Americans alone spend $22 billion a year on self-storage. I mean, that's like a ridiculous number.
It's insane. It's insane. So there's enough self-storage space in this country for every man, woman, and child to have 7 square feet. It's insane. It's nuts. So I started thinking about all of the stuff that's in storage and, you know, just ways to extract the value out of that stuff. You know, I started thinking about how those items have not only monetary value hidden inside, but also social value. You know, when you start to share those items, when you start to, you know, instead of just having stuff collect dust, when you start to lend that stuff out, now you're connecting with your neighbors in meaningful ways. You're saving them money. You're actually helping the people that live next door, helping to regain a sense of neighborhood community. We give you a suggested inventory items to start with, you know, simple things like ladders, power drills, things that a lot of people own that don't use very often. And then you can connect your Facebook and Twitter accounts so that you automatically have friends built in. And it connects you with people near you as well. And so you can search for items near you. You can also add wish list items. So if there's something you need that you can't find on the site, if you add that to your wish list, then everybody near you sees that you need that item. And that encourages them to add it so you can borrow that from them.
So you're very upfront on the site about Neighbor Goods being a safe place for a community, which is obviously important because this is, I mean, it's implied that people are at least going to have to meet each other once to borrow and once to give back. How do you convince people that it's okay to meet their neighbors?
Well, and that's the funny thing is, you know, lending and borrowing is actually something that we already know how to do. It's something we do all the time already. But somehow when you put that online, you know, people are like, whoa, how are you going to keep me safe? You know, so we actually just sort of try to repeat a lot of the social rules that we have offline, online, on Neighbor Goods. So when you add in, first and foremost, with primarily social. So when you add something to the site, you can say who has access to it. So if it's something of high value, you can say, you know what, only my friends can request to borrow this item. And then you obviously are in charge of who your friends are and managing your social graph. And then also, you know, unlike sites like Craigslist and FreeCycle, we love those sites, don't get me wrong. They're really great at helping you get rid of stuff you don't want anymore. Mm-hmm. When you want that item back, all of a sudden you need a whole different set of tools. So that's where Neighbor Goods comes in. So, I mean, obviously we borrow from all of those sites that came before us. eBay is really great for the ratings. Facebook is great for the social. And Craigslist is great for the local piece. So we're sort of combining all three of those things to make it more efficient and more safe.
So using Neighbor Goods is free for me, right? Whether I want to rent out something, Neighbor Goods isn't taking a cut of the price that I'm setting for my ladder, say.
Not at all. We're not involved in the transactions at all. You know, we're just providing information and connecting people. We wanted to make sure that it was free for people who need to use it. You know, people don't have money right now. Right. The whole idea is to get access to stuff, you know, more cheaply or for free. So we didn't want to get in the way of those transactions. So when you add an item to Neighbor Goods to your inventory, there are three levels of trust, three levels of access. You can say, my friend can borrow this, have access to it. Verified neighbors have access to it, or everybody. So that verified neighbor piece is sort of the mid-level. And that's, to verify, it's a one-time fee of $4.99. We send a code to your house, and then you log in that code, and then it shows everybody near you that we've verified your address. So that's, you know, it gives you access to more stuff, just adds an additional layer of trust to the site, and that's an optional thing for $4.99. On top of that, you know, we're accepting donations. We're asking people to sort of chip in to support Neighbor Goods if they like the idea. And it's been going really well. I mean, you know, we just launched 3 weeks ago. We already have revenue. We're growing like crazy. It's been really exciting.
That's awesome. You know, one of the things that I feel that I'm guilty of is I have so many tools now in order to not have to talk to people, you know, not only not see them, but not call them on the phone or answer when they call me. And I feel like that is kind of like a geek culture issue that a lot of us face right now because it's so easy to isolate ourselves.
I think it's a different drive that that drives people to try it out. You know, it's more like, wow, I'm interested in this movement to be more sustainable, or I'm interested in this movement, you know, the local movement, the farmers market movement, the local food movement. Like, we're obviously a part of that. And I think that that desire drives a lot of the initial activity. So it may not necessarily be, you know, I really want to lend out this power drill. It's much more, actually, I want to connect to my neighbors. I want to be involved in my neighborhood. There's a huge desire for that right now.
Cool. So how can people connect with you on Neighbor Goods?
So I am Mickeypedia all over the web, including on Neighbor Goods, if you want to share with me. But if you sign up at neighborgoods.net, you'll automatically be connected to me that way as well.
Oh, perfect. So you're like the mascot kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm sort
you're
of
the
like
ambassador.
The MySpace Tom, yeah.
Awesome. Well, connect with Mickey on Neighbor Goods, which is at neighborgoods.net. And then you can, of course, follow a lot of Mickey's online and offline shenanigans at mickeypedia.com. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Awesome. Thank you, Sarah. It's been fun.
So I actually went in and put in my zip code in Neighbor Goods. And it turns out that there's a guy very, very close to me, just a couple blocks, who's sharing a ladder.
One ladder?
Yes, just the one, which is probably all I would need at once.
Because right. No, like
I'm not an octopus.
Multiple ladders.
But, you know, which I love, because actually a ladder is something that I don't own, and I only need once in a while when I've got to change the light bulb. My ceilings are really high, and there's no way I'm going to get up there otherwise. Yeah. But it definitely, Neighbor Goods is, it's still small site.
Right. One guy with one ladder does not make a big sharing community.
The community needs to keep growing in order for not only people like me to still find it useful, but for other people to continue to get involved, because the more you've got to share and, you know, swap and rent for low prices, the better it is for everybody.
Right.
So I love the idea, and I hope Neighbor Goods continues to thrive, and thanks so much to Mickey Krimmel again. If you want to know more about Neighbor Goods, just visit us at twit.tv/GTT. I like that new acronym of ours. It's not really
G-T-T.
An acronym. GTT.
GTT.
TNT, GTT, TWIT. It's all good.
IPT.
We'll be right back.
We're partnering with four of the biggest venture capital firms in the clean energy space, three in the U.S., one in Europe. You know, again, we think that the combination of GE investment and venture capital investment is going to allow us to increase innovation. It's going to allow us to accelerate new ideas. It puts us shoulder to shoulder with some of the smartest tech investors, and we can use the what I would call the industrial clout of GE to bring technologies to this marketplace faster.
GE announced its challenge at a San Francisco event along with its four venture capital partners: Emerald Technology Ventures, Foundation Capital, Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers, and Rockport Capital Partners have all joined with GE. Ideas from companies and individuals can be entered through the ecoimagination.com website for the next 10 weeks. So check out ecoimagination.com.
Time now to chat about the green tech stories that have caught our eye and hopefully will catch yours over the last week. And we should probably take this opportunity to explain that we're a weekly show. We're not a daily show, so we're not going to be breaking stories so much, but we definitely still want to be talking about the stories that have been shifting, stories that we've been following, trends.
Right, because news is good, it's important, and
exactly.
We do want to stay on top of stuff, but it might not be top of the hour.
Exactly. I mean, we're no TNT, we're a weekly show, we're a little bit different, and I do think that especially with green technology, a lot of the stuff is not happening like this. It's a slow process. People have to adopt new procedures. And so sometimes these stories evolve over a long period of time. We want to make sure we're on top of them. Mm-hmm. And that's what our news section is all about. So what's on tap first? A greener way to recharge batteries.
That's right. This is an interesting story. We have all sorts of movements that are just wasted energy, right? You brush your teeth and you're moving your hand all over the place. What if you could...
Wait, that's not exercise?
But there's a lot of wasted energy there. What if you could actually harness those movements for charging batteries? And a Japanese company, Brother Industries, has actually developed some batteries, and the batteries are recharged by vibrations.
So like shaking them.
Yeah.
So this is totally different than, you know, the flashlights that you see at Sharper Image, where you crank it and then it has a charge for a certain amount of time, because that's Well, that is, I mean, are they using are those using batteries too, and that's how you're recharging them?
Yes, so that's a magnetic induction, and it's a very similar process. They're, again, using magnetic induction, but the batteries are a lot smaller, so they're AA and AAA size. So they could power maybe a remote control or...
Or a toothbrush.
A toothbrush, exactly. So,
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's the kind of thing where I know when something stops working, like my television remote, you know, the volume's not working.
Shake it.
And usually as a last-ditch effort, I kind of go, you know, is this thing broken? And maybe that's actually what, you know, with these batteries, and I can do that just for fun and actually keep them alive a little bit longer.
And maybe build up some bicep muscles
And maybe
or
build
something.
Up some bicep muscles, of which I have none. Not now anyway, so I'm into that. What about the new technology of cement?
This is exciting. Yeah. Who knew cement is incredibly CO2 emitting? So it's
so that's carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide. It's estimated that about 5% of global CO2 emissions are related to carbon related to concrete production.
Wow.
Because they dig limestone out of mountainsides
And that's the carving out that you see in beautiful otherwise beautiful remote areas where you go, "Oh, what are they doing?" And that's usually for cement making, right?
Right. So there's a company that their nanotech group in this construction company has developed concrete that uses waste products from thermal energy plants.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's completely recyclable, and they say that it could cut the direct CO2 emissions by 100%.
Wow. So, and this is like, I mean, I know that cement sidewalks are just one way that cement is used. So, you know, there's cement all over the place, but... You know, if I'm walking on it with my dirty shoes, I don't care if it's recycled or not. It certainly doesn't have to be brand new.
Right.
And if it's going to cut down on CO2 emissions, I mean, who wouldn't be for this? It's great.
It's awesome.
And why haven't we been doing it beforehand?
Because we just
I guess that's the age-old question, isn't it?
Yes. It's all about thinking new.
So what about government stimulus money and where it's going?
So the government started this ARPA funding project about 2007, but they didn't give any money to it. And it was supposed to be specifically for green business ideas and green technologies.
It's through the Department of Energy. And so it's like they had set up this, you know, a way to fund green projects, but no money was actually going anywhere.
Exactly.
Why? Because things move slowly in the government kind of thing.
Yeah. But lo and behold, the recession happens and the stimulus bill comes along. And so suddenly it had money, and they just gave the last of the money out to 43 different grantees. And it's over $390 million that they've granted out to different green technology research projects and startup projects.
And these are, if I understand it correctly, I mean, there were thousands of applications. A lot of folks obviously want the stimulus money. And only, a couple hundred were even... had gone into sort of the second stage where they were being considered.
Yeah.
And it's like, you've got to prove, you not only have a great idea, but it has to be something that's proven, hey, if I have this amount of time and this amount of money, we'll cut down CO2 emissions by 50% and that sort of thing. So it's not just like, hey, I've got a pie in the sky idea, give us some money and see if we do anything with it. These are actual sustainable ideas.
Actual sustainable ideas that are probably going to go great places.
Well, so good on you, stimulus bill.
Woot.
New York City makes real-time water metering available to residents. What does that mean?
So they've installed a whole bunch of internet accessing water meters around the city, and they're going to be putting them into action in a wave-like periodicity. So, I think Queens is coming up first, and then different areas of the city will get this. But they've gotten rid of a contractor that they were paying to go read people's water meters and then charge people for how much water they were using. So they've gotten rid of this contractor they had to pay a lot of money to. They now have these water meters that put all of a resident's water use information up on the internet where they can actually track how much water they're using, when they're using the most water, and what is using the most water in their household. And so it in effect can allow the resident to change their habits if that's what they want to do, if they want to decrease the amount of money they're spending on water.
So for example, in my house, I think this is a great, I think my house is a great example because it's like my shower pressure is off the charts. I have great shower pressure, but I'm always thinking, gosh, I'm using a lot of water. You know, I've tried to turn it down a little bit because, yeah, I worry that it's like there's no funnel really. Then there's the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. Then there's my washer dryer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not really sure what's using the most. I mean, I would guess my shower, but I have no idea. It would be so helpful for me to know what I'm doing that's the most expensive and that's the most consuming.
Yep.
And, you know, if I run the dishwasher right before I go to bed, it's not going to bother me. I mean, I rarely do that. I usually do it before I leave in the morning. But if it matters, you know, if 12 hours matter.
Yep,
you know,
it makes a difference.
Yeah, I'm going to save myself a couple of dollars and buy a latte. I'll totally do that.
Exactly.
So when's it coming here? Why does New York City have to be the first one?
Ah, they voted it in. Yeah, they've put the money toward it. The meters are pretty expensive, so that's one of the big downsides to it. But they are saving money because they did get rid of that contractor they were paying.
Well, I'm sure the contractor isn't super happy about it, but it sounds like it's pretty much the best idea for everybody else.
Yeah.
Cool. There's the news.
That's right. And while I was reading the news, I got kind of curious about some of the technologies that the government was giving that stimulus money to. And I learned about a type of battery called flow batteries. So curiosity got the better of me. I investigated and I made a segment about what flow batteries are and how they work. Here it is. Solar and wind are two of the more promising alternative energies, but they come with a major problem. They don't always provide energy when it's needed. The sun rises and sets, leaving different parts of the planet in darkness for several hours at a time. And wind can be highly variable, blowing like snot one day, but still as a statue the next. Unfortunately, our energy needs don't stop when the sun sets or the wind stops blowing. So how do we solve the problem without turning to foreign fossil fuels? Storage. But what is the best way to store excess solar or wind energy? Some wind installations have turned to compressed air storage, in which unused wind energy is used to power air compressors that push air into underground sealed caves. The problem is that airtight spaces to contain the air are hard to find, and the energy provided needs to be supplemented with natural gas-powered generators. Large solar thermal installations use molten heat exchangers. These use solar energy collected during the day to heat oil. The hot oil can then either produce steam at a power plant or be used to heat a liquid salt mixture, which stores the heat for later use. The problem with this solution is that it's expensive. Hydrogen fuel cells could also be a solution, but they too are prohibitively expensive at the scale necessary for large solar or wind installations. A final option that has actually been in use for years is a kind of rechargeable battery known as flow or redox batteries. Redox refers to the chemical reduction-oxidation reaction on which they're based. Conventional batteries, like the ones powering your laptop or smartphone, place electrodes on either side of the electrolyte. This design limits the storage capacity of the battery because as you increase the amount of energy-storing electrolyte, the electrodes get moved further apart, increasing the internal resistance and waste heat production, and decreasing the amount of power that can actually be delivered. With flow batteries, this problem is solved by separating the electrolyte from the electrodes. The electrolyte is stored in two tanks and pumped into the reactor that houses the electrodes and an electrolyzer when it's needed. So when the sun is shining or when the wind is blowing, electrical energy supplied to the reactor can charge the flow batteries by causing a chemical reduction reaction in one electrolyte and an oxidation reaction in the other. The charged electrolyte is stored until the sun goes down or the wind stops blowing. Then the reaction is simply reversed and energy can be discharged from the system in the form of electricity. This design essentially separates energy storage from power delivery, making it possible to increase storage while maintaining power. The size of the battery really is only limited by how much electrolyte you can store. So these flow battery systems seem promising, but really only if researchers can address the existing problems of high costs, short lifetimes, and safety. And but with the government funding that they've gotten, this seems like it could be possible. And a lab in Berkeley has actually received a lot of funding to work on a new kind of flow battery that's based on bromine and hydrogen to be a part of the electric grid.
The large scale grid idea, that makes sense to me, but I mean, could we expect something like this in hybrid cars in the future?
It's very possible. The concept could totally work, and I think people are thinking about it. Right now, the technology, because of the high cost, it really only works on these large-scale, high-energy, high-power need projects. Mm-hmm. But electric cars, hybrid cars, it could definitely, that could be a direction it could go.
And this is sort of, you know, this works as a proof of concept all the time, where it's like, once we've got this in order, then the consumers start seeing direct benefits.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about it, I mean, in terms of electric cars and hybrids, the battery life is the big problem with those. And so if you can get batteries that have longer lives, that could be, you know, huge, huge. But with these flow batteries, their lifetime right now is like 20 years. And so as they become more efficient, we could be looking at lifetimes of 40 or 50 years. And if you have one of those in your car...
I know. Can you imagine?
You're set.
It's like all the leasing agents would be very upset at all the car dealerships. You know, 20 years, maybe you want to buy that car outright.
Yeah.
Anyway, very interesting. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We'll be right back. If you have a gadget idea, you want us to review something or take a look at it or make fun of it or add it to the show or anything in between, then let us know.
Right.
Green Tech Today at twit.tv.
Right. And you can also, like we said at the beginning of the show, if you have any DIY projects or anything that you think is just awesome and the epitome of green tech, send it to us.
Yeah, whether you've done it yourself or you want us to try it out, I mean, we're open to everything because we know that... As interested as we are, we're just two people. Two very smart people, of course. But we need your input to make the show
better.
Community effort. So ideas, news stories, DIY projects, gadgets. What else?
Websites. Yeah, apps.
Good guest ideas. Apps. iPhone, iPad, Android.
Yep.
Linux.
Anything, really.
We want to feature your stuff, is what we're saying. So we've got a phone number, set up a Google Voice account. This is a fun one. 415-GT-TODAY.
I love it.
I do, too.
I think it's great.
415-GTTODAY. That's our number.
GTTODAY.
Of course, you can get in touch with us via email, greentechtoday@twit.tv. Or if you want to send us maybe a video, you know, if you have a little project, a little something that you've walked through, or you have a question or a comment or anything, just upload it to YouTube or Vimeo or
wherever.
Really, the video site of your choice, and send us the link, and we'll feature it. And we welcome as much feedback as possible to make episode 2 all that much better.
Yep.
So with that, we will bid you adieu. That's it for this week. Green Tech Today, episode 1.
I know. High five.
High five.
Yeah.
See you guys next week.
Thanks for watching.
Bye.